Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, Doctor Strange box office, we play a Batman tier list, and we dig into some spoilers for Ozark. Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 213 of Real Blend, a podcast that was born in the dark. Molded by it. In fact, we didn't see the light until we were men. And by then, it was only blinding. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor here at Cinema Blend. Joined on this week's show. Well, actually, what are we talking about on this week's show? Doctor Strange box office. We're ranking Batman movies. Oh, okay. Right. Come on, Jake.
No, sorry. I thought we were recording this podcast 10 years ago.
I just wanted to, to show how different a line delivery can make. See, I took it from like an inquisitive sort of approach.
I felt a chill on my
end. Thank you, Kev.
I was in some like dark atmospheric Snyder shot when you were saying all that.
And my chill was more like awkwardness for the audience as they try to figure out what the hell was going on.
I just thought Sean was done doing jokes and he was going to start showing us his poetry at the top of the show.
I thought he was going
to
say
he goes to like those poetry readings, but it's just movie lines. And he's going to keep going to see until someone figures it out. He's
up in front of
like in front of a crowd of people. He's like Ezekiel 25:17.
I want to hear Kevin's joke.
No, we both see that happens. That's funny. We'll pull this curtain back. Stepping on each other is something that happens because we're on Zoom and sometimes you try and talk. My joke doesn't make any sense now anyway. So continue.
Damn it. Well, we're also doing Ozark spoilers.
Hashtag cop salad.
The show. Joining us, as always, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., sporting his Real Blend merch. Hi, Kev.
Yeah. Hi. I just want to point out to a YouTube commenter on one of our shows from last week
who said that I was good or bad,
touching my face and touching my hair too much during the show. So I am now aware of this because your one comment negatively out of all the positive comments has stuck with me. So I'm going to put my hands down
to be fair.
I actually appreciate it because I don't realize the tics that I have sometimes, like I have certain words. So no, I'm not being sarcastic. I was just then, but thank you for listening to our show. But I did hear your comment and I'm going to stop touching my face.
I saw this comment. I will defend my friend Kevin here slightly. You have to. Yeah, we all do. But that particular, it was extra because you were about to go interview Tom Cruise on a red carpet and you had like, you were like half ready. Like you were like,
weren't you getting, dressed mid podcast?
I was getting dressed mid podcast. We were all going to interview Tom Cruise.
In an impeccable white tuxedo. Yeah.
We're going to discuss this. We'll discuss this later when we get to when we have the Top Gun Maverick release. But we were all in San Diego, obviously together and on an aircraft carrier with Tom Cruise. I just touched my face when I said that. So I saw the comment and I'm trying to learn from it. So because like there's a couple things like I say basically a lot on TV sometimes. And I'll get a comment and then you just try and not say it. But then you say it more because you're thinking about it. But anyways, that's my rant.
The other square over there is Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Hi, Jake. How are you?
Hello, handsome. I miss you.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Hey, Jake, touch your face.
Well, now see, that's the weird thing. Now I feel like I'm self-conscious about like, do I touch my face?
Touch Jake's face.
Like, do I touch?
If you're watching us on YouTube and counting the number of times we touch our face, thank you so much for joining us. Please head down, give us a like and a subscribe. Join us here each week for our audio listeners. If you want to join us in video form, head to youtube.com/realblendpodcast. And if you leave us a comment, we will read it.
Yeah, we're sponsored.
Do you guys read the YouTube comments?
Oh, I do all the time. Yes, I will give another shout out to the notification crew that joins us every single Friday morning.
Always growing.
As soon as the show drops.
The only reason I saw it is because sometimes Sean will screenshot a YouTube comment. But by the way, this segment is brought to you by Neutrogena. Go ahead.
There you go. And of course, we're available where you get your podcast needs met. Hey, we have a premium show that drops every Monday. And in addition to premium, which gives you an ad-free version of the show and a newsletter from myself, you get, what's the other thing that's going for it? Oh, well, the premium episode.
Yes. Premium episode.
Drops on Monday. So check the description for information on where you can sign up. We're going to play a new game this week that Gabe tried to explain to all of us before we started recording the show, and it sounds very complicated. But
it sounded like Christopher, that picture of Christopher Nolan. Yeah. On a chalkboard explaining Memento. That's how I envisioned Gabe's explanation of this game. Yeah. It sounds awesome, but I have no idea what he said.
Yeah.
It just means we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
It's gonna be fun.
Yeah. and Jake is going to end up winning. Oh, and it actually has something to do with box office, which we're going to discuss next, which is the box office results for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. They don't yet have Jake's $8, but they'll be getting it very soon. Instead, the film made $201 million domestically, $278 million internationally.
I don't think that's right. 187, dude.
Today.
187?
As of today.
Oh, as of now.
Okay. As of now. But the opening weekend was 187.
Okay, so it's at a grand total of $479 million worldwide after its opening weekend. I thought that this might be the movie that maybe just didn't do as well as the other Marvel films. And I expect, and Kevin, I want to ask you this because I'm curious your thoughts. Do you think Thor will have a bigger opening weekend?
That's a good question.
So it's a great question because I had the exact same vibe that you did about Strange, because going you and I saw Strange together and I walked out and I kept thinking to myself, is there a little bit of Marvel fatigue now because we had the No Way Home train, no pun intended, because there's a train scene in that movie. But then there's, you know, that was a big deal. And then there was so many interviews after it for months with Tom Cruise. He promoted Uncharted, or Tom Holland. He promoted Uncharted. So everything kind of felt like we were in Marvel for a long time, even after No Way Home came out.
Doctor Strange is a big part of that movie, too.
Well, sadly, No Way Home is a better Doctor Strange movie than Multiverse of Madness. But we'll get it. We reviewed it last week. We all liked it. We just had some issues with it. But overall, in terms of box office, I was shocked how at the end of the day, here's what's interesting to me. Think about casually telling someone 10 years ago that a $187 million opening weekend domestically was it's still not even the highest of all time. Like that number is so massive. If you think about the scale of box office, like films that are doing like what Lost City did 30 million or whatever, or Jackass Forever did 30 million. And those are great numbers for those titles. But $187 million domestically is a ton of freaking money. And
not a holiday weekend, you know,
right,
just
right.
A new Marvel.
That's what blows my mind is almost as if it just nonchalantly made $450 million this weekend. Right. And it was just like,
it's the quietest $500 million opening weekend I think I've ever seen in my life.
That's the thing is, like, if you think about how much time we've spent over the years in our careers talking about box office success, right? And like numbers and Avatar and Endgame and Avatar passing Endgame, you know, we're talking billions of dollars in films that are opening up to $250 million or whatever they are. But for a film to nonchalantly, casually just drop to a $450 million, it honestly is kind of scary. Did you see that tweet that someone put out where it was like 60 showings of Doctor Strange at one theater in one day?
But see, like, I think that's what we're getting towards. I think that theaters are going to be for blockbusters, you know, like
I'm okay with it as long as it keeps theaters alive. And that's kind of the cool thing about these Marvel films and where we are now is I have no problem with these movies making all this money if it's going to keep theaters open to still let me see the new Paul Thomas Anderson film in theaters or the new Tarantino film.
Do we start? Is it going to start where it's like treating itself like concert venues where, like, you know, United Center, Soldier Field, that's home to the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dive bar across the street is home to, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, where it's like, you know, the sort of the size of the venue is more equitable to the behemoth of the movie.
I think that's a smart comparison, but the dive bar down the street makes its money every day of the week selling alcohol as a bar. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the theater doesn't really have an obvious, you know, B tier or A tier in this instance, business model necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like if people aren't going to see Paul Thomas Anderson movies and they specialize in that, or they only show that, that's where it gets a little tricky, I think.
Well, I'm more encouraged by Everything Everywhere All at Once, like approaching 50 million. To me, that is, that's the box office story of the year.
And what's fascinating about that story is there's no one can explain it, because the movie's great. And then you go, OK, well, that did well. Why didn't Ambulance do well? Why didn't this do well or that do well? And everyone's trying to analyze it and kind of understand it. And I think the movie is just so different. And
everyone's talking about it.
And plus, we're kind of all in a multiverse mood right now, obviously, from No Way Home. I think we're all just kind of in that world. But to answer your question, Sean, will it affect Thor? I mean, I will tell you right now, I don't think so at all. I think Thor will be even bigger, because going into this weekend, I thought Doctor Strange might slip a bit. I thought maybe not that it wouldn't make a lot of money, but I am blown away by how much money it made, especially because the reviews.
I really thought it was going to hit 200. I'm actually surprised it didn't hit 200.
Really? But dude, did you see the opening weekend of the first Doctor Strange is only like 89 million?
Yeah, but this doesn't, to me, this doesn't even feel so much like a sequel to Doctor Strange as it does a sequel to No Way Home. Like this, just this, now that we've opened up this possibility of like people coming in and they were already teasing, you know, they were already teasing the trailer, like Professor X, and there were all these other cameo rumors, whether they ended up being true or not. So like, I don't really even see this as a sequel to,
like, in a weird sort of way. It's a Doctor Strange movie, but it's like the next Marvel movie because it's just pushing forward a lot of Marvel stories.
Yeah.
So you just go to see
the movie.
Yeah,
it is very much so. Yes. And it introduces new characters. And I think some people were really tied into the Raimi bit of it all. So
I love the Raimi stuff was great. It just felt like there was two movies battling to be one and they couldn't figure out who was top dog. That's what it, in terms of like the MCU versus Sam Raimi, I felt like I was watching a battle.
We'll be here when Thor Love and Thunder comes around. And
Wait, were you surprised at all, Sean, by the numbers? Just curious.
Very. Yeah, I was very surprised.
It was
surprised.
Larger, right, than we thought. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. Only because, again, you say going back, you know, X amount of years to say that $187 million is an opening weekend. But if you had told me that Marvel was making a second Doctor Strange movie and it was approaching $200 million as an opening week, like it's again, not to differentiate between Marvel and DC, and we're going to get to DC in a second. But like the fact that Marvel can roll out a Doctor Strange movie and just destroy and DC can't get a Superman movie off the ground is a great illustration of how far apart these studios are in terms of their success rate.
I'll give you a comparison. And this is the last thing we'll say about this. Here's why I think the numbers are big. All right. So let's go to Ant-Man, for example. Ant-Man 1 did $57 million opening weekend. OK, so theoretically, the sequel would have done bigger than that. Correct. So you go from 57 million to the second one, which opened up to 75 million. So you're jumping up.
That's the expected jump.
Right. So Doctor Strange 1 opens to what? 70. You go 70, 85 million, and then you jump up to 187. That is a large.
That's a leap.
And Ant-Man, while not as big of a character, clearly, and to Jake's point, No Way Home.
No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, Doctor Strange is a gigantic aspect of this current phase of Marvel, as is Ant-Man, but not as prominent, obviously, with No Way Home. So that's a good point that Jake made. But to jump up 100 million domestically between your first and second film.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
That's massive.
That's like Avengers numbers. It's huge. Yeah.
All right. So we've been having a lot of fun recently with these tier lists, and we did all of Marvel, phase one through up to this point in phase four.
Oh.
Now we're switching gears and we're going to shift over to the Dark Knight, to the Caped Crusader himself, the Man Bat, the most
this is
psychopathic superhero.
Wow.
Of all time.
I've seen all of these, but two.
Nice.
Yeah. So Gabe is going to take over from here because we have a couple of changes, including the F tier is going to be altered. Gabe, why don't you let me take over the tier list.
Yeah. So welcome to a tier list. If you haven't seen us do one of these before, we have a two-parter for the MCU, which includes the MCU Disney Plus shows. Recommend going watching those. I think they're really fun. For this, we are just going to do the character of Batman. Premium listeners might actually be familiar with this because we sort of tested this format on the premium feed with Spider-Man at first, and that was fun. You can go subscribe to that feed, check out that episode. If you've never seen a tier list before, I would find that surprising, but we're just going to take all of these Batman films and rank them from S, meaning above an A, special, super. I don't really know what it stands for. If you play video games,
say super.
You understand.
Superior.
All the way down to D. And then for this round, I've added a haven't seen because there are some more obscure Batman films or older ones or that people may not have seen, animated ones. So if we haven't seen them, we won't rank them. But if anyone's seen them, feel free to rank it. And that's
still
just
wanted to mention them. Yeah.
Of course.
I want to point out before we even start here that you have the theatrical cut of Justice League.
Yeah, and I can't wait to talk about that. Yeah, as we should.
Oh, there's
that's
both.
Good.
As we should. Those are two
there.
Completely different films.
Yeah.
That's controversial.
You guys are going to be annoyed by how many A's I think there are here.
How many A's?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start off with...
We're usually A heavy.
We are A heavy.
You're A heavy.
Even for Batman.
True.
Let's start with Batman the movie, 1966.
I've never seen it, to be honest with you.
I've never seen it.
Never seen it. You tell me the last film. Never
I've
seen it.
I've seen it. Okay.
So what was it like to watch that opening night in your 20s?
You did the junket, right?
Yeah, Sean, you did the shark.
That one-on-one with Adam West on that set was unbelievable, man. And that was a cool set.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is a C. It's a C. Yeah. But I mean, since the bulk of people haven't seen it, do we put it into haven't seen? How does it work?
Let's put it in a C. We'll put it in a C. I don't think any of us are going to catch up and come back and want to rank it. So as far as Real Blend is concerned,
it's super kitschy.
But it's also reflective of the time, though.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's important. To see, especially going into the next one we're about to talk about, it's important to remember what these movies were when they came out, because a kid who watches Burton's Batman now is going to be like, what the hell? The Joker's dancing to Prince. But like at the time, you know, that was it. So like we also have to keep in mind all these, you know, and again, I've not seen the Adam West Batman, but I've seen the series, and it's very like that's an era of Batman. I don't even think it's meant to be campy. I think now we look back and it's campy, but it wasn't then.
That's just what media was.
That was just life.
I don't. Burgess Meredith as the Penguin, like, he's vamping it up.
Right. But on the scale of Batman, I think C sounds about right. Having seen some of the series.
You said we can't do that.
No. Why? On the scale of Batman. This is a Batman scale. But I'm saying it's, what do you feel? Once these are on the list, yes.
I don't even know what I'm saying because I haven't seen it. But
What Jake is referencing is, once we start to get these on the list, what we don't do is say, well, I don't think that movie X is a B, but we have it on B, so I can't put this movie here because I think it's a B. You know, we're not comparing the list because we're averaging our scores. It's a collaborative.
Do you guys ever wonder if he's Kanye's favorite Batman?
Interesting. Or at least related to him in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I was just, that's what I was wondering.
Moving on. We have Batman 1989. Michael Keaton, Tim Burton.
I think that's an A.
I'd say A.
Yeah, A. That's just, yeah, I mean, Keaton is phenomenal. Nicholson's phenomenal. Burton's realization of Gotham is phenomenal.
I've gone back to rewatch this somewhat recently because my memory of it is that it's like a little bit overrated, in that it's not as good as people make it out to be, sort of thing. Because I remember the cheesy bits of it, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that Nicholson was overdoing it a tad.
It's a lot darker than I remembered.
Yeah, exactly. I was wrong. It actually holds up really well. And Keaton is, as you say, fantastic.
I can't imagine why I rewatched, but I rewatched it recently and felt the same way I felt about it while rewatching Top Gun, which is like, I really expected it to be aged and dated, and neither were. And it was a really pleasant surprise for both of them.
Well, that scene when the Joker, doesn't he just like open a gun up and just start shooting people in an office or something like that? I can't remember the scene. Nicholson's Joker. I thought there was like some, like, he just like randomly kills people, like in a, but I know he's a villain, but it's pretty brutal. Like, yeah, it's not like a comic booky, like, you're right. I kind of look back on Batman and I was like, I wonder if that's going to be a little over the top and cheesy. That movie's kind of dark and gritty. Like, I mean, it's Burton clearly, but it's a lot darker than I remembered.
All right. Well, Tim Burton, Michael Keaton again.
And Danny Elfman. Oh, that score.
Elfman, classic score. Batman Returns, 1992. Batman Returns.
So I'm in the camp that I don't like this one as much as the first one. Some people argue that it's as good, if not better, and I don't think it is.
I think it's a B.
I think that's an S.
You think S. it's an S?
An S, yeah. Kev, I think it's one of the all-time great Batman.
I'm with Kev that I think it's
like
a B.
Like Dark Knight level?
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Now this is where, all right, now this is going to get a little more interesting than I thought. Okay. All right. I'm a B on that one for sure. I love Danny DeVito.
Come on.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
It's a perfectly realized Gotham. It is a perfectly realized everything. Oh my God. Danny DeVito's performance. Oscar worthy nomination. Like, he deserved an Oscar nomination for that.
So you're going to tell me that the Batman Returns is going to be on par with some of the best Nolan Batman films.
Yes,
we'll get there. We haven't gotten to Nolan yet.
And again, we're not supposed to be allowed to do that. But yes, I do. I do think. I think a director's vision of Gotham
to be special.
You have like 84 stupid ass Marvel movies in S. Like if Kevin Feige sneezes on a film reel, you put it in S.
It's true.
Batman Returns belongs in the S.
Batman Returns is a good movie. It's not an S.
It is an S.
It's a good movie. It's strong.
It's a very good movie. Gabe, don't you do normally weigh in these situations?
Gabe hasn't weighed in yet.
I would put it at A. I would put it at A, trending B, maybe, but I feel like it's just as good as 89 Batman. Like, I've never
So we put it in A then?
To me, I always put them at the same level. S would be too high for me. But averaging out, that would put it with two B's, an S, and an A. It puts it at an A, I believe.
That's fine.
So I'll take it.
I'm not angry, but
it's good. It's
not an A. Welcome to my world during the Marvel.
Tim Burton's movies are not both A's.
Yeah,
they're not.
Yes, they are.
The first one. Well, you're right, because one of them's an S.
All right, so here's one that I've seen, but I wouldn't be comfortable ranking it because I haven't seen it since I was like a child. If I watched it now, it would be with fresh eyes, which is the animated film Batman: Mask of the Phantasm.
I've never seen it, but I've only heard amazing things.
Exactly. I honestly, and I don't mean to keep doing this, I would put that in the A category. Batman, first of all, Batman the Animated Series is one of the all-time great animated series in the history of television. I don't think I'm going overboard by saying that. And this is like an incredible extended episode of that. So we bring in Mark Hamill's Joker. It's just everything that's great about Batman the Animated Series.
Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, Kevin, who is just a genius.
He's Batman.
It's incredible.
If we had to pick a definitive Batman, like, wouldn't you pick the voice of Kevin Conroy? Like,
I mean, I get angry when people start throwing around names and then don't mention him. And honestly, I'm probably guilty of that as well. Like, I get mad at myself whenever I go, oh my God, how did I not mention Kevin? So I'm just as guilty of that. But I don't mean to speak for the group. For me, Mask of Phantasm, I would give an A.
I've not seen it, so I have to.
I haven't seen it.
So for me, the reason why I say I'm less comfortable ranking it because I can't differentiate it from the animated series. Like, it's been that long. Like, I wouldn't know enough to say is it an S or an A for
me. But it didn't really go to theaters, right? I think it was straight to video. Yeah, in the snap case.
Yeah, but so that's why in my head I would probably lean towards S just because that's how I view the animated series and that creative team. But I'm definitely comfortable at an A, Jake. Absolutely. Cool. A lot of A's for the old Batman.
We could always return to Batman Returns and bring it down to a B.
Sure.
Return.
If we're doing that, then we're sitting down and redoing all of Marvel.
All right.
And we're just going to shift everything down.
We are going down.
You guys get real pissy whenever it's my movies that I'm bringing up.
It's going to get heated when we get to Nolan.
But my God, freaking Ant-Man, let's hurl some Oscars at it.
Ant-Man's awesome.
Better than Batman Returns, sir.
All right, we're gonna stay on topic with Batman and not
please
Marvel.
Real Thank blend you. Out of context quote yeah. that
all right Batman Forever, the first Schumacher, Val Kilmer as the Bat, 1995.
I think that's a fun B. I think that's a really fun B.
Again, I've said this before on the show, I have an affinity for the Schumacher films because I was a small child when those came out. I was not jaded at all. I did not have like a that's not my Batman moment. That was the Batman.
yeah. And honestly, like if you were of a certain age, like Jim Carrey was it at that time. Oh, and Jim Carrey in a Batman movie was.
And that version of DC was like the Six Flags rides were that version of DC.
Yes.
And so like I remember being like going like Batman ride. And it felt like you were in a Schumacher film.
Yeah.
That's not really talking about the movie, though.
No, we are. I rewatched it recently when we lost Joel Schumacher and just still had that feeling of like, this is really fun.
It's a B.
I like it as B.
Yeah. I think it's a B, too.
Okay, I'm not going to fight you guys. It's a C for me because it's so corny. Like, the Schumacher ones are just really corny. And this
but there's a difference between this one and the one we're about to talk about. There's a 100%. Massive difference.
And I think this one's a C and that's a D. But I'll give you guys a B. Tommy Lee Jones is horrific in this movie.
Oh, I think he's fantastic.
I love
Tommy Lee Jones scene chewing and Jim Carrey scene. Everyone is as the kids say, everyone in that movie. No, I disagree. I think everyone in that movie understands the assignment.
All again, right. I won't fight you because
lose.
The differentiation between the B and the C is fine.
But yeah, like, I'm very happy with this ranking so far.
This is the type of movie that was the movie exists to sell Happy Meals. It's not, they didn't make this movie because they had a movie they had
I to make. I think that if
I mean, technically,
I think if Schumacher could defend right himself,
because would,
yeah,
I mean, don't forget, like, the whole reason Warner Brothers was pissed about Batman Returns is because McDonald's came to them and they were like, how can we do Happy Meal toys for a movie where the penguin bites the nose off of a guy? Like, so Sean is technically right. And Batman Forever exists too. So yes, but it's also, it doesn't change the fact that it's a very fun movie.
They didn't connect on the promise of the title though, because he didn't stay Batman Forever. Like, they kept changing Batman's.
Batman one time.
This time.
Batman YOLO. All right. The second and final Joel Schumacher Batman. Batman and Robin. Clooney.
It's a D.
It's a C because Nipples I like
Clooney.
I like Arnold in this one. I like Mr. Freeze. I don't care. Yeah. I like his jokes.
Yeah. It's fun. I'm C, trending D.
I'm C. Yeah.
This is all subjective. I was the right age for these. Two films are back to back.
Gentlemen,
but that one's harder to watch than.
So this isn't a D. Nothing's a D.
First of all, you're not wrong. I don't know. We haven't gotten to. There's another film that I think.
No, there's definitely a D.
There's a D on this list we haven't gotten yet.
Interesting.
Wait, do we not have anything below a D anymore?
No, because remember we changed it to F.
That's right. Okay,
cool. I could add an F if we wanted. I just didn't think we'd really go that low.
Yeah, I don't really.
There's an F in
I'm C, trending D. Like, so add that into the average.
I feel like this is a D.
So, okay, so we have two C's. A D. I'm not mad at a C. C is probably the right answer.
Yeah. I honestly do feel like C is the right answer. Because again, it's a movie that is exactly what it was meant to be.
But that's if the intention is bad and then the movie turns out bad, it doesn't win a point.
I think it's supposed to be much more reflective of like the Adam West days.
But do you remember how shitty Bane is in this movie? He's luchador.
I
gotta be honest.
His
own thing.
I just have a different experience watching Batman and Robin than I do The Dark Knight.
Yes, you were
a
kid.
I don't go into it, but I can still sit down and watch Batman and Robin and just be like, oh, this is ridiculous, but I'm also having a really fun time.
It's fun. I think
Batman shouldn't be fun.
Okay.
Shut
up. Batman shouldn't be fun.
Oh my
Batman
God.
Batman shouldn't
you,
be fun.
You sound like comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Batman can be fun in a Lego Batman movie.
All right, Sean, I'm going to respond to you the way I want to respond to all these people on the internet that say
we just got
like
a whole
this.
Emo Batman movie.
There is no he shouldn't be or he has to be. It's
fictional characters.
It's a fictional character. Allow anyone to take it and make their version of it, and it does not have to be whatever.
That's fine.
Whatever
That's
your
fine.
Introduction was.
But it doesn't change the fact that this is a terrible
Isn't that the message of Nolan's Batman movies? Is that Batman is whatever we need him to be? Like, whenever I was 10 years old, that's what I needed Batman to be.
Love it.
Listen, I'm on record that this is a D. Y'all do what you want.
I'm on record that you're a D.
All right.
That's fine.
C for me. I'll go to a C because that does feel right. I do. Yeah.
C feels right. Like, it really does.
I want to say B still. And then Kev, where'd you end
returns.
Up?
B?
Batman and Robin is C. No, return should be a B.
That's three C's.
All right, so we're going to go
fine.
With a C.
Make it a C. But you're wrong. All of you are wrong.
This is see now you're this. Welcome to my Marvel ranking world.
It's fine.
All right. Now here's
where the fights begin.
Now we move up to 2005 with Nolan's Batman Begins.
An S.
I knew Sean was going to say this was an S.
So did I.
An S.
And it honestly might.
It's a perfect movie.
It's perfect.
It's not. It's an
perfect
A.
Movie.
What's
nothing
a,
bad
it's,
about it.
Oh, Jake, I would say it's a trending S.
Okay.
Which I know doesn't help split, but it's a trending
Kev,
S.
Kev, to follow up though, what knocks it from an S for you? You're saying it's not perfect. What's the
No. I just think The Dark Knight is far superior. This would be like Terminator 1 to Terminator 2 being an A to an S. Like, okay. I think Batman Begins is an A. It's a great film, great score, great action, great setup to the story. But Dark Knight blows it over the top. Like, Dark Knight is just like the difference in quality from 1 to 2. It to me is just
they
astounding.
They could both be an S.
I just don't think that Batman Begins had it's
I think it's a great film. I think it's like a, it's a perfect introduction to the Batman character.
Yeah, it is a perfect encapsulation.
Honestly, if we picked Batman S, I wouldn't be mad about it.
Oh, I mean, come on.
Yeah,
guys.
We're splitting hairs by this point. Yeah, we're splitting hairs between S and A. Like we're not really fighting over this one.
I think I want to say S.
I mean, I wouldn't be, like I said, I'm A trending S, so
Morgan Freeman is terrific in this. Michael Caine Morgan is the perfect. Freeman.
As long as the next Alfred. One's an S, I don't care.
And I don't want to get into The Dark Knight just yet because we're about to get in there. So we can follow up on this. The Dark Knight has some, I think, well-criticized problems with the way the third act plot works a little bit. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think Batman Begins has any of this. Like, I think it's perfectly plotted.
I think The Dark Knight is one of the most revolutionary films of all time. I think Batman Begins is a great Batman
movie. It has so many reasons. Yeah. I'm not saying The Dark Knight is trash. I'm just saying, looking at them too, both S is probably fine. I don't see this, like, I don't see like a fundamental flaw.
Oh, it's not a flaw. It's just a great Batman movie. It's just not a masterpiece. Like,
all right, so where do we go here? We have two S's. We have an A trending S and we have an A. Does that make it an S? Or does it have to be an A?
I have no problem with being an S. I think that the thing that like kind of brings it down for me a little bit is that I think that Bale is infinitely more interesting as Batman than he is Bruce Wayne.
It's on the opposite.
And he is Bruce Wayne much more in this movie than he is in the other movie that we're going to talk about that we're not allowed to talk about yet.
You don't like him as Bruce Wayne?
No, I love his Bruce. No, yeah, keep in mind, he is my favorite both. I just enjoy watching him more as Batman than I do
as much
Bruce Wayne. All right,
I think he's the best Bruce Wayne ever, but I think Affleck's the best Batman ever.
All right, so confidently we're putting Batman Begins at S, huh?
I'm perfectly okay with that.
Okay with that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move right into The Dark Knight.
Haven't seen it.
Jake's feed just drops. We don't even address it in the show. He never shows up again.
So I know Kevin thinks it's an S.
I think it's an A.
I want to hear your reason.
tell me why you're wrong.
No.
Let me tell you when I stopped listening to what you were saying.
The third act pulls it down to an A for me. The bit on the boats is stupid.
How dare you? Stupid. I'm literally looking out where it happens.
It's fine.
What does that? What does that have to do with anything?
That has nothing to do with anything.
I'm looking at
them. Like the whole bit with Morgan Freeman, you know, tapping into the using the technology to tap into the phones and the threat about who's going to do what with the explosives, and it's not fully formed. It's not fully baked. And it feels like it was a setup through no fault of Nolan's. You know, I think he probably would have intended to use Joker more.
Sure.
You know, it felt like they left him in a spot where they would have been able to continue to use him. And I think they
literally left him hanging.
If Nolan has said, and I think he said in interviews that he didn't think ahead of whether he was planning to use Joker or whatever the intention was. I don't think that that's probably accurate. I think he probably would have continued to tell a Joker story.
I still believe that they would have brought in Bane and Bane would have broken the Joker out of Arkham. I truly believe that that's what would have happened.
Maybe. And so, but I also just think that there's so much going on in The Dark Knight, which might be commendable to it. It tackles a lot, right? Like it's the mob money and it's Harvey Dent, you know, and it's him turning into Two-Face. It's the Joker. It's Bruce trying to figure out what's going on with Rachel. There's so much happening.
Rachel!
I think some of it gets short shrift. Like there's that whole element in the middle of it where the guy is threatening to reveal Bruce's identity on TV. And then like Bruce Wayne has to like cut him off in a traffic jam. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening in this movie? I don't know. I don't think Nolan had as strong of a grip on all of the material as he did in. I think Batman Begins is has no fat on it whatsoever. Yeah. I think The Dark Knight has almost too much going on with it. And you know, a lot of it's amazing. And I think some of it isn't. So for that reason,
when you
open a
Batman film with an homage to Michael Mann's Heat, on a 70 millimeter IMAX screen. I'd never seen anything like that. Also, like, what's brilliant about The Dark Knight is it is to me, as opposed to Batman Begins, Dark Knight was a crime drama. It felt like a genuine genre film that wasn't a superhero film that just happened to have superheroes in it. And that's why I think like films like Winter Soldier were able to happen because of films like Dark Knight, where you can have grounded material in these universes in a way where like it's hand to hand. It feels immersive. Like, you know, when Batman's fighting Joker or whatever, these scenes feel visceral and real because they are. Dark Knight is like, I wouldn't go as far as saying I don't think hardly any movie ever made is perfect. Maybe Godfather Part Two or Vertigo. But you know, every film you could probably find a flaw in somehow. But I don't disagree that Dark Knight has some storytelling issues. But it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. And I've said this on the show before, and I'll keep saying it. It changed everything for me in terms of what movies could be, and not just because of the technical aspects of it, which is a really cool aspect in that way, but like, put technical aside, I had never felt that level of immersion in my entire life ever. Nothing had ever come close to the way I felt in watching that film. Right. I was right there, and it was an awakening moment. Like, it was like, I said this before on the show, I genuinely feel lucky to be living in an era where he's working, because like, if I went back, I would love to have lived through Hitchcock or maybe Orson Welles or Kubrick from The Killing. Maybe, because I know I was alive when he died, but I didn't get that era in the time that it happened. But Nolan is someone I'm looking at going, damn, I am so happy that I get to be here when he's doing this, because years from now,
yeah, just put it
where we're yeah, it's fine. But anyways,
I want to hear Jake's rationale for it.
Yeah, it's an S. It's not just a perfect superhero film. It's not just a perfect Batman film. Like, I actually think the script is really tight for all of the strings that it's pulling. I was in a film philosophy class one time. We would watch in college, and we would watch movies and then have like philosophical debates about some of the points that were brought up. And our final, and the subject of the final was, I'm going to show you a clip of a movie and it's going to present a question and you have to write a philosophy paper about. And that was what the final was. And we had to write the paper in class in that moment. And it was Morgan Freeman's monologue about like voyeurism. From The Dark Knight, about the whole like, what's right and what do we have a right to see, if it has an impact on people's lives, if it has a positive impact. It was so like it's literally being taught in college courses around the country. And The Dark Knight, I was lucky enough to have attended that junket. And a friend of the show, Chase Cusack, came to L.A. with me and came to the screening with me. And it was, to date, the best movie theater experience of my life. It was like a movie where like we were jacked about it going in. It was more phenomenal than we ever even imagined. We saw it in true IMAX, and to like have Chase there, and just like, we literally walked out of the theater and just jumped up and down in the theater lobby. Like, that is the it's the most I've ever seen a movie in theaters. I think I ended up seeing it not quite Kevin degree, but I saw it six times, which for me is a lot.
It was
six times before it ever opened, because every time there would be a screening, because they screened the hell out of it because they knew what they had. Every time there was a screening in Houston, I would just take someone back. I would take back another friend, or take the girl I was dating, or take my parents. I just kept going to see it over
showing
and over
people
again.
That movie was treat.
And then like watching their face when things would happen, or like watching their face, you know, with the magic trick, watching their face when the truck would flip. It's the greatest theatrical experience. And honestly, if it never gets topped, I'm perfectly fine with that. So yes, it's an S.
Yeah. And the DVD features on that film, or the Blu-ray features, that was some of the greatest film school I'd ever seen. I was so obsessed with like, cause Chris Nolan like narrates these features, and it's like in his brilliant, like awesome voice. And he's just like, it's awesome. That truck flip, if you haven't had a chance, people out there, check out the feature on the Blu-ray, because the way they tested that before they did it on the streets of Chicago It's just insane. And and the guy who flipped that truck, the actor, the stunt actor who was in there, was also the same actor, stunt actor who drove the plane into the hangar.
So tell me, did the Joker have clowns on every skyscraper so that he knew exactly where the helicopters were going to be going so that they could shoot the wires across?
I mean, dude, we could seriously do this, Sean, all day.
When Tobey Maguire came from another universe and walked into, like, how did that work?
Now I'm going to stop us and we're going to move on, because as Jake was alluding to,
sling ring on and he was
we could go all day.
It's getting tense in here.
Now let's find out. Does the Dark Knight rise or does he fall? Because we have the Dark Knight Rises.
To see.
For all the stroking off of Nolan
you guys just did, the master, the genius, the I can do no wrong Nolan, that is a strong B.
However, you feel that there are some great moments in that movie.
I'm obsessed with Nolan.
Save me. That is a B.
Disappointing. Right,
let's not talk over each other so much. We have listeners at home to appease.
There are some great, some of the greatest Batman. Now, granted, it is an incredibly flawed film, but there are some of the greatest Batman moments ever put to film in that movie. Him fighting Bane in the sewer.
Great.
Incredible. The opening, the plane crash, the fight with him and Bane in the snow at the end, and whenever Bane is punching him in the stomach, Zimmer's drums come in. Like, that's just like, yes, there's some really stupid stuff. Really, like I've never understood how, like, and when the clock is ticking, how Batman had time to paint the bat symbol in gasoline on the bridge and draw a little line. Like, yes, there's incredibly stupid stuff, but the stuff that hits like a freaking freight train, man. It's too good to put in the C category. It's too good.
No, I'll tell you why. First of all, Bane's voice is awful.
Like, it's iconic.
I disagree.
It is so distracting.
I love Hardy. It sounds disconnected from the story.
The Batman
one at a
fight
time. One at a time, please. Awesome. I feel bad for Jeff, who's editing it this week. One at a time.
The bat breaking scene's awesome.
I'll tell you why his voice sounds awful in it is because Nolan mixed it like dog shit the first time through, and Hardy had to go back and re-record everything. So it literally sounds like it's taped on
to a finished performance. His voice sounded like it was from another film.
Brought the plane sequence to theaters and they showed it, the opening sequence.
I remember this.
And the feedback from it was, I don't understand a single word they're saying. Not a single word. You couldn't understand a single thing that Bane was saying. And then once you finally, it's a cool scene, but it doesn't serve anything. Like,
what do you mean? It's the introduction of Bane. It introduces Bane. You learn about how just diabolical and smart he is. It's a great introduction for Bane.
What did he do in that scene?
When he kills
that
guy.
What did he accomplish?
Drops that plane.
In that scene.
It's not plot driven. There might be something there that he gets that he uses later plot wise.
Or you. Sounds like Michael Caine.
But it's a great introduction to the character.
I love the resolution and the idea that, like, Batman isn't Bruce Wayne. Like, Batman is whoever we need him to be. I just think it does some great stuff right.
So we have a predicament. I haven't given my score yet.
Can I give one more point of why this is a C and cannot go any higher?
You're a C.
Okay.
Kevin Smith brought up the point about this movie, and the minute he said it, I didn't think of this on my own, but the minute he said it, I was like, oh my God, you're so incredibly right. In the beginning of the movie, Batman retires. Bruce Wayne retires, like, because he's sad over Rachel. And he said, if anyone knows anything about Batman, and Kevin Smith writes Batman books. I mean, he calls himself the Fat Man. Like, he's the biggest Batman fan ever. And he said that would only drive Batman to go out and fight crime even
See,
harder.
See, I don't think that's retire. Fair. To say, I'm with Gabe on this, to say, oh, a character Gabe would never do, like, it's well, I said this the earlier, whole what he was. The whole idea of these characters is that we did get different people's interpretation of them. We get different, like, yeah, maybe like the version of Batman that Kevin Smith likes Yes, would be driven nuts by that. But like the Batman started as a detective, and we just got a detective movie. So how come people haven't been bitching for the last 50 years that Batman's not a detective? Like, there is no one Batman. There are variations of different people's interpretation of Batman. So you can't, no one has a right to say, Jake, that Batman would do this or that. No one does.
The fundamental core of Batman is that he wouldn't retire.
I'm gonna kick your fundamental core's ass. There isn't. Aren't like variations of movies like amazing what ifs? Like why can't we have a Batman movie where we go, oh, he was driven to the point of grief where he did? Like, why is it so wrong?
So why
is it such a big deal that we got that?
But I can tell you that that's stupid.
You're stupid.
Okay. All right. I think it's a B. And so that puts us in a difficult position. We have two Bs and two
I'm B trending A.
C's.
I'm C trending D.
Okay. Yeah, you are.
I don't know what to do here because the scales are balanced, as Ethan Hawke would say in Moon Knight. How do we decide? Do we
flip a coin? Kevin, are you trending B at all, dude? Think of the good stuff, man. Think of the good times we had.
That movie was a disappointment to me.
You're disappointing me right now.
No, dude, it's not.
It's good. A B. It's
not
B.
Even good.
It's I would not, say I'm B trending C for good. Sure. I'm B trending C for sure. I'm not B
no,
trending
Gabe.
A. You're not genuinely B trending A, though. You said that to tip the scales.
No, I think he meant it.
Right. No, I can see. You know, he didn't immediately respond. He's thinking
Isn't there
about it.
A
he knows he's B
where
trending
every,
C.
All the cops in Gotham get caught in a tunnel for like six months. It's so stupid. It's such a bad movie.
I think we got to put it at C because, Jake, I think if you and I are being honest, we're B trending C.
No, I'm solid B. I'm solid B.
You're not trending.
But I'm solid B in the sense that like the stuff that I dislike, I hate. But the stuff that I love it so.
I think we have to put it C because my trending C is the only thing that's tipping it. And this is all
the headline right now.
It doesn't matter. But
movie podcast puts Batman Forever over Dark Knight Rises or something like that.
Yeah, sure. Oh, I'd love that headline. Please, if you Hollywood Reporter, write this up. Fantastic. Could use the publicity.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm gonna have to drop it.
Only one member of podcast, not a douchebag.
Okay. Well, it's not you, so. All right.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Is BVS next or is the Lego movie next? Which one came first?
I think BVS.
BVS? Okay. 2017. Yeah. Yes, 2016. BVS. We have BVS. Next, as
okay,
a Batman movie.
Are Which we cut? Talking about theatrical or Ultimate Edition?
Oh, that's Jesus. A good question.
I hadn't thought about this. You
that,
nerds.
That poster is theatrical.
Ultimate Edition is the only one that I...
I think we have to do Ultimate Edition.
Let's do Ultimate Edition, I guess.
Has everyone seen the Ultimate
You're
Edition?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, yeah.
The yeah, but is there a edition. Cut of Dark Knight Rises where he cuts out all the bullshit? Who knows? Maybe that's an S. No, okay. We'll do Ultimate Edition because it is great.
I'd say it's an A. I think Ultimate Edition is an A.
It's awesome.
Jake?
It's a B for me. I really like it. I still think it's messy. I don't and never have truly loved Affleck's Batman.
Yeah.
I do.
I've never not seen Affleck. It's unfortunate. I really like his Batman. Yeah. I'm glad we have it.
Yeah.
But that movie has three of the best Batman scenes of all time. Warehouse scene, incredible. Mm-hmm. The Batmobile chase, incredible.
Really
and
well
then
done.
The Batman versus Superman fight is incredible.
Like those that's great. Can I say maybe a hot take? Because it's a meme and I get it and whatever. I genuinely like the Martha moment.
I like the Martha too. Thing too.
I love the Martha moment.
I don't understand. I think people say they don't because they think that's the cool thing to say.
Yeah,
I thought that was the coolest connection. I've never heard, knew that.
And it's not like it's not like it's he's saying it's not as crazy or campy as like we have the same mom. It's just that like in that moment he saw him as a human being. I thought that was such a beautiful to tie that to their mothers.
Yeah, really. I am with you on that. I will back that.
In the Ultimate Edition, it shows a really good sense of Clark Kent going out and investigating who the Batman is, which I found to be really interesting. It gives way more credence to Lex Luthor manipulating the two of them to fight against each other, which was kind of hackneyed in the theatrical cut.
Mm-hmm. And the bullet stories expanded.
Yeah, the whole Jimmy Olsen stuff is actually very crucial.
And we got to like the introduction of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman is really great.
Yeah, she's
great.
That's true too.
Really great. I mean, okay, I would guitar score.
I would say B trending A.
Okay. I'm A. I think I'm A. So we're.
So,
we're
so I'm. I honestly, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Okay.
It's the warehouse scene alone is an S.
I think it's one of those things that for me, and granted, we talk about different interpretations and different variations of Batman. Right. I just like my Batman a little bit more grounded. Like I don't really want my Batman, not saying one is right and one is wrong, but I just like my Batman not in a fantastical world, if that makes sense. So I think that's why, like, the second he teams up with a Superman or a Wonder Woman or an Aquaman, it's lesser for me than the
you've heard of the Justice League though, right?
We'll get there.
All right. Wondering. Let's move on to the Lego Batman, a fun entrance into the Batman canon. I have not seen it though.
I think it's an A.
I think that's an A.
I think
it's a brilliant script. It's
off.
It is a brilliant script. It, like, honestly, I would argue just as good as the Lego movie.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because it took what was a very funny part of the Lego movie and expanded it out, which usually means that it runs the joke into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that they found just as many funny things, to explore.
Also, introduction of Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Very good point. Yes. I think Will Arnett is perfect as that version of the delusional Batman.
Yeah.
And the only thing that counts against it right now is I couldn't tell you what the plot is. I have no idea what the story is.
I remember something with the Joker. But couldn't you say that, like, this
Batman movie, the plot is something about the Joker?
The Lego Batman, though, is such like a reflection and a result of Nolan's Batmans. Which I think is like it's a very interesting,
darkness,
smart, buried commentary on
that's
like
kind of how the Lego
what's
brand
happened
works.
To yeah
the
that's
Lego
true
narrative
too.
Stuff is always like reflecting the pop culture moment. Like, I don't know if you ever play those games and stuff, but their stories are very, you know, they like to subvert this sort of joke. So we're A. We got one B.
Kev's got a B, but Kev, is there a reason?
I'm B trending A. I like that film, but the reason why I didn't think A originally is because I don't remember the story.
Yeah,
I remember liking it. But I'm B trending A. I don't mind an A because I remember thinking it was great. I just don't remember it enough to be confident in an A, but I'm okay with it.
All right.
I can remember being at the press screening and laughing my face off during it.
I love it.
I met Tony Hawk at that premiere. I remember that.
Well, that's an A right there.
All right.
Yeah, but I don't mean to brag, but can I tell you who I saw at the Star Wars Episode 9 premiere?
Us?
Dude from Backstreet Boys.
Oh, it's true.
Okay.
AJ.
Okay, one that we...
So one of my favorite stories.
One that we skipped over, I'm going to double back on, because I don't know that any of us have seen this. I haven't seen this. I've heard it's fantastic. I know the storyline, and the story is really cool, but Batman... Under the Red Hood. It's like 75 minutes. I think it was straight to video. It's very borderline Batman movie, but it's a Batman movie.
It's interesting that like that's on there, but a lot of the other animated films that are on like HBO Max, like The Killing Joke, aren't on here.
Yeah, these are like the two that are like noted as films.
Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. I mean Mask of Phantasm I get.
Yeah, that and Lego Batman are like as far as I can tell officially. This one was like a weird middle ground because it's like 75 minutes. Has anyone seen this movie, Batman Under the Red Hood?
I have not been able to.
No, okay. I didn't think so. It was on this list. We will just put it in haven't seen. That's why I added this category. I've heard it's great. I know that storyline. Yeah. That storyline is badass.
Yeah.
But I've never seen that. That
is it. Is it Kevin doing the voice?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, that's
I think
cool.
So.
That makes me want to watch it.
Let me check. Vamp while I check.
We're vamping very well.
Yeah, you guys should talk. Was what vamping means.
Oh, is that what you mean? Normally, Gabe can't get us to shut up. And at this moment, he's like, please talk for the moment.
Now I know the secret. Could you guys give me 2 minutes of talking? And then you guys.
And we just saw it. I'm feeling pretty good about this ranking so far.
Yeah, I think it's. I think we're being very fair.
Yeah.
Except for Dark Knight being an S.
I feel much better about this ranking, even though I've had to make some concessions. Than I did the Marvel ranking.
What about the Spider-Man ranking?
We had a lot of S's. Bruce Greenwood played Batman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jensen Ackles plays Jason Todd. Neil Patrick Harris plays Dick Grayson. John DiMaggio, which if you're like a Futurama fan, or he's just a very, very famous voice actor, plays Joker.
Oh, so no Hamill?
Jason Isaacs as Ra's al Ghul. Yeah, I think this was a, it's just a completely fresh cast. Right. Yeah, it would kind of be weird for Hamill to have a different Batman.
Sure.
I don't think they've ever, I mean, I could be wrong, but I feel like they've always been together. All right, that brings us to Justice League. Justice League theatrical version as brought to you by Joss Whedon. Do I need to add an F?
I would put that in the F. If we had an F, I would say F.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a single redeeming quality about it.
I don't think any of these that we have left are going to go into D. So I'm just going to.
Yeah, neither of those are D, so we're fine.
If watching on video, I've changed the D to an F. Imagine an empty D.
I think it's just, that's obvious.
Just an F.
I don't hate that film as much as you guys do, but I...
Would you put it in a D?
No, but after seeing, like, obviously Snyder's real cut. I mean, because remember, you have to remember, Justice League, the theatrical cut, still had Snyder scenes in it. Like there were
a lot of
things that I... There were things that I liked.
Recropped and recolored.
Like that, I mean, there were things I liked in that film when I first saw it, but I also didn't know the story about what happened and everything yet. So my thoughts in that film have changed drastically over the years, just because when I learned more about it and then I saw his actual intended cut,
right,
it changed it for me. So
I wanted to
my
ask
thoughts
that.
In this movie are a little muddled. It's weird.
I'll ask the table, but Sean in particular, because you wrote a book on this, you can find that on Amazon or wherever you buy books.
I did.
How did you feel when you finally saw the Snyder cut? Like, did that make that seem even worse? Like, how much did the Justice League cut diminish?
It got worse watching
when
it.
You were like, wait, this is what he had that he could have, like, that he had to deal with?
Yeah. It made me angrier about how bad the Justice League cut is. Because I thought the Justice League movie was really, really bad to begin with. Like, it's sloppily put together. There's scenes that look like they were, you know, cut and stitched in really uncomfortable ways. All the Henry Cavill stuff that we wrote in depth about the Russian family, you know, that's shoehorned into it, the color scheme of it and how awful it looks. And then when you see Snyder's finished version and you think of the extent that Whedon went to change it, you know, he didn't just sort of make do with what was there and punch in some humor.
Right.
He literally changed it from like start to finish. Like that opening scene with Batman on the roof with the guy from Mindhunter is just so clumsy and awkward and silly, you know, and you realize that like Joss wrote that as like a different opening. So it's all of it is bad. Like I've heard one defense of Joss's League, which makes a little bit of sense to me, which is I've heard some parents say, my kids really like this because they love seeing all the characters together and I can't show them Zach's version because Zach's version is super intense. But if you have kids who just want to see Superman next to Batman and Wonder Woman. Yeah.
In the same way that we're defending Batman
exactly.
and Robin.
For sure. Yeah.
The exact
then,
same thought.
Then cool. I can't make that, you know, I can't
take
that away from you. And that makes a ton of sense in the world. But outside of that, of an adolescent who doesn't process film in any way, shape or form, I don't think the movie has any merit.
Sean, I have a quick question for you. I think it goes without saying that the Snyder cut is not what Zack Snyder would have been able to put in theaters.
Right.
What do you think his theatrical cut would have looked like?
It still would have been much better. I think he would have just taken most of what's there.
And I don't mean that as a like defense of Joss's cut. I'm just curious as to like what his two and a half hour cut would have looked like.
Yeah, I think he probably would have gotten away with like a 2:45.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about taking an hour and 15.
Sure.
So maybe it would be first off you'd lop off the entire stuff at the end with the future scene, you know, with the nightmare scene and Joe, because that's all extra shoots.
Yeah.
And maybe they'd scale back a lot of the battle towards the end. But you'd leave in a lot of significant things like Clark's reunion with his mom on the farm.
Sure.
And, you know, probably you tighten up some. I think he probably also would have made the decision to take out some of the Cyborg and his father stuff and just tighten that up a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of the Amazon stuff.
Yeah. So everything there, but maybe just everything tightened up a little bit.
Tightened up.
I think so.
Okay, yes. That makes sense.
Less slow
makes
motion.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You buy back 30 minutes.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
There.
I would say you cut slow motion. It's a 90-minute movie.
Yeah, I do, but I do love it. I do love
it. Oh, my
it.
God, it's great. Stuff. It's fantastic.
Let's,
yeah.
let's dive right into Zack Snyder's Justice League.
I have to just say, I got to say A. Okay. Because I don't think it's an S.
I'm an A as well.
I will say an A.
Easy. Easy.
Yeah. I think it's A. It's a fascinating experiment.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is so
and one that, and it's awesome. One that I think yeah. all of us are glad exists.
It's awesome.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. All right. And we will round this off. We're just going to keep it moving. We could keep, we kind of talked about Zack Snyder's Justice League with the Justice League. That brings us to friend of the show. Check out his interview. It's fantastic. Matt Reeves, the Batman.
That's another A for me.
It's another A for me.
I'm B trending A, but I don't mind
yeah.
A.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hard A. I wonder if I'm A trending S, and I want to. I have only seen it once.
Interesting.
I absolutely loved my experience watching it. I love the vengeance arc, and kind of where that goes, and that how that culminates in the scene when he realizes, you know, in his second year, he sort of understands what he is and what he could be and what he wants to be, and how that's being reflected in these villains and, beautiful, and I love that. There are some problems having like spoken with you guys and some friends, but I wonder if I see it again where it would land on that. It's probably going to be a solid
I will say it lost like decimal points of influence on a second watch.
See, that's so interesting. Okay, I'm sorry, continue.
Well, I picked up a few more things that looked like they were restrictions from COVID, which isn't the movie's fault necessarily.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But some of the scenes that were shot on sets. And then I could not shake, because Kevin brought it up, that Commissioner Gordon he's in a different movie.
He is a little
his
handy.
Line readings yeah. are.
He's in like the Adam West films or something. Like I don't know where he like. I love Jeffrey Wright, such a great actor. I'm just like it didn't feel like they were like Bane's voice in Dark Knight Rises. It's like they don't feel like they're in the same movie.
So I rewatched it on HBO Max not too long back, and I remember thinking, man. The detective nature of this story makes it play really well at home. Like the fact that, like, yes, there are really, really big, huge, bombastic scenes that were fantastic in theaters, like the turning on of the Batmobile. But the intimacy of the detective angle of it, I think, makes it play really well at home.
Cool.
Also, my thing is on the back of the DVD.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true.
I just having it on the same line as Batman Forever would be weird, because I like Batman
again,
Forever.
Again, we don't play it.
I know either. It's hard to see it like that. I mean, because to me, the Batman is a better film than Batman Forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I probably would have Batman Forever to C and then Batman at a B if I was thinking right. about
but
it.
But again, this is a collaborative list. Oh, so there's always going to be that. There's always going to be that.
Yeah, you put it,
and in the same way that I think it's weird that Lego Batman and Batman Returns are on the same, but again, that's not how we do it.
All right. Well, there's our Batman tier list.
Lego I'm Batman actually, and the 4-hour Snyder Cut.
I'm actually fairly happy with that, to be honest with you.
It's a fun list. Write in if you're watching on YouTube, comment below, let us know your list where you have things. A lot of you are probably going to tell us how wrong we are, and that's okay. We think that we're wrong too, because we don't all agree with all these rankings. It's fun. But we are going to take a quick ad break, a late ad break. Because we are about an hour into the show, so this will be fun. And then when we get back, the boys are going to talk Ozark spoilers a little bit before we move on. So we'll be right back.
Okay, now that Ozark has dropped its final batch of episodes and has concluded, we wanted to take some time to dive into the show as a whole and talk about spoilers for the back half of season, what was this, four? Season four?
Yep. Yeah, season four, part two.
Season four, part two. Okay, so if you haven't seen Ozark, skip ahead to our labeled This Week in Movies section. And I'm going to go first, and I'm just going to say that I was not prepared for how dark back half was going to be. And mind you, like, Ozark, it's not that Ozark is a happy show in any way, shape, or form, and that, you know, the birds have tended to ruin the lives of just about everybody around them. But like they took out literally everyone, leading up into this. And I kind of thought that like there would be some kind of redemption and it was really just, a gross feeling of the bad guys won.
Yeah.
thing. And, I guess I commend it, you know, for embracing that, that darkness, which was prevalent in the show all the way throughout, you know, right down to the final moment being the corruption of the youngest member of the family.
And the sense of pride on Marty and Wendy's face, like they almost like when he comes out with that gun at the end.
Yeah.
Almost like, oh, look what we've done. Like he's one of us now.
I didn't read that. I read it as like, I didn't read that they were proud of him. I read that they were like, oh, this is the only way we're going to get out of this situation.
Right.
Like, okay. I think that what, so for people who don't know what we're referring to, like the son at the end of the show, if you watch the series, comes out with a gun. It has a very Sopranos ending. It goes to black and you have to kind of decide what you think happens. But it's not as it's a little more clear than Sopranos. But in that moment, like basically, if you go back to first season of Ozark, you saw Jonah playing with the gun. He was always kind of playing with guns. He was shooting animals, doing some things that seemed a little concerning to the parents, obviously. But at the end of the day, it's a story about a family who's laundering money for a drug cartel, and they enter into the Ozarks and basically ruin everyone's lives that are there. It's really depressing. We'll get to Ruth in a second, because I think that's my only complaint about the finales. I think she should have lived, and I'll explain why. But I do think the Jonah moment, I think they're not proud of him for what he's about to do, which is shoot this guy who basically has uncovered that they are responsible for Laura Linney's character's brother's death. And that moment is defining, because we spent an entire season with this family trying to get out of this situation, and literally their entire life forward is in the hands of this one guy. And I think in that moment, the reason why they seem approving is because they just put their kids through all of this. And now I don't know timing wise if Jonah could have tossed the gun to Bateman for them to pull the trigger so Jonah didn't have to do it.
I think it's very indicative that Jonah pulled the trigger.
Oh, no, I'm not saying he doesn't pull the trigger. I'm saying that there could have been, like, I don't find them approving of the fact that he's going to kill somebody. But
there was even that moment earlier in the season where Jonah starts laundering money for them. And Marty kind of says, man, laundering money at 15. And Wendy says, like, do not be proud of him for this. So to me, that's already kind of planting the seeds that they are kind of proud that they're getting into this stuff.
See, I always thought the push pull of that situation with the kids and the parents were that they never felt OK with the fact that their kids were involved in this at all. And I think in that moment, the proud of moment, I think they're joking within their situation of how crazy this all is anyways. But in terms of the look, I found that to be like, oh, this is just the way it has to be. And I mean, like,
I want to ask a question, wild. Though. Do you guys think that the show stuck the landing? Is Ozark a good show or a great show?
I think it's a great show. What I think is interesting is that, and I'm curious as to the people that surround you guys, everyone in my life came to me and with the question of not is someone going to die, but who is going to die? That, like, people are going, like, of the birds, like, do you think the kids are going to die, or the parents going to die, or one of the kids going to die? Like, but like this mentality of they've got to pay for what they've done, right? There has to be. And the fact that the show wasn't that, like, it was almost the antithesis of Breaking
Bad.
People
didn't like that.
Breaking Bad very much had Walter White, you know, having his comeuppance. He had to pay for what he did, and he did. And I think that what this show says, because you're right, Sean, throughout the show, the birds are constantly told, you don't care how many lives you ruin to do what you have to do. And that message, to me, summed up the entire ending. They don't care who they had to screw over, even Ruth. They did not care. And the fact that this show basically ended by saying, look, a lot of times the bad guy, but not enough to do anything about it.
I think he was afraid of his wife.
I think he was afraid of the sister.
Well, no, Laura Linney was like the brilliance of Laura Linney's performance in the show is that she really is the commanding presence of that family.
But you're right. But I also think on the flip side of that Marty's a coward. I think he's very smart, but at the end of the day, like, I think he was willing to do whatever it takes to get out. I think he's going to be torn by Ruth. I think that's going to weigh on him heavily. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to chalk it up to that's what needed to be done to get me and my family out of this situation.
Go back to the first episode of Ozark. when it, the whole first episode happens, the guy, a guy jumps off the building, right? Or is thrown out of the
thrown
building.
Off the building.
Thrown off the building. And the end of that episode is Marty pulling over and on a street to go behind a tree and cry. Because he said he's about, like, you know, like all that happened in that moment, in that first episode leading up to that. And you go, how the hell is this guy? That, to me, that arc in that first episode of Ozark is the arc of Marty Bird, the whole show. Because basically,
but,
Marty.
But he's a different guy by the end of that show.
I'm not saying he's a, I'm not saying he's not a different guy. I'm saying that Marty's push pull and moral compass, to me, led me to believe that every situation they were ever in affected him in incredibly in a big way. I think Laura Linney was cold to it. Soulless was a word that people
I think
were
she
using.
Like very similar she, to Breaking Bad. Like Heisenberg. Right. Like she had that, like kind of that, like right. I liked it. Like I'm not doing it for my family. I'm good
she,
at it.
Yeah, well, the she moment was, she broke she down broke on the bad. Side of the road after her brother, that was mm-hmm. the end for her. Like I don't think she was ever the same after that point. Mm-hmm.
I know we got to move on, but the Ruth thing I want to bring up real fast because I think this is to me and. This is not like a personal thing of like what I want or what I expect from a show. But when you spend an entire series ruining everyone's lives in this family and Ruth is really to me the best character in the entire show next to Laura Linney. But I think that in my opinion, based on the emotional arc that we went through with this show mm-hmm. and the damage that this family had done. And I'm not saying that had to be done this way to right the wrongs, but I felt like Ruth did as a character deserve. Her death was really uninspired. The person who killed her, well, it just didn't feel like the impact of a character that large and that big of a deal in a show like that would be taken off like that. And I just, to me, she had been through so much. Mm-hmm. And I get that, you know, tragedy happens in shows all the time. I get that. But that character, to me, with the investment that I had in her, I just felt like she deserved it.
But isn't that sort of the point of the show is that tragedy. Like people don't get what they deserve. Like some people deserve to be killed and they lived, and some people deserve to live and they got where they were killed. Life.
When the head of the chemical company or whoever confesses that it was her who did it. That was such a gut punch of a moment. Yeah. And, you know, so I guess I have to say that it was a great show because I was invested emotionally in all of those twists and turns. Yeah.
And also Bateman, a hell of a director.
Agreed. Really and Laura Linney directed the episode. Of this particular part of it, which I think was the episode where Marty goes off.
Isn't that
on
the
that
one in traffic? Yeah.
In the traffic.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right.
Last thing I'll say is this. If you're a David Fincher fan, this is out there already, but it's kind of cool if you're just tuning in or never heard us talk about it before. But the symbols at the beginning of the show, it's David Fincher's graphic artist. He creates those for Bateman. Bateman basically sends him the details of how every episode's going to play out. They find out the symbols they're going to use and then they manipulate them to spell Ozark. So if you're a Fincher fan, that's that graphic artist. And it's kind of a cool thing. And if you kind of go back and watch the series, those symbols foreshadow every episode, but they also do spell Ozark, which is cool. So
I had no idea that they spelled Ozark.
Yeah. So like they'll take a fish head and they'll manipulate it to look like an R or like a K will be like chair upside down. Every one of them spells Ozark.
That's interesting.
O-Z-A-R-K. Yeah.
Okay. This week in movies, we have two films that are coming both to streaming, one to theaters a little bit. In that Firestarter, the Zac Efron, Stephen King adaptation is going to theaters, but it's also going to be available on Peacock if you happen to have that streaming
service.
Feels
like a quiet release.
It does, very much so, especially for May, you know.
And for a Stephen King adaptation.
Right.
And where do you rank? You're a kingophile. Where do you rank Firestarter in his recognizable because of the Drew Barrymore film?
Yeah, I think so.
I've never read the book.
Definitely not a book that stands out to me as one that I have revisited often. Yeah. And even with his earliest ones, like Christine and Firestarter and Cujo, sort of fall into that realm of I know they exist. Mm-hmm. It feels like he was still figuring out his voice.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see this new adaptation. But I'm guiltily going to pull it up on Peacock this weekend. Probably just watch it maybe Friday night. The other one is Senior Year, which is, I believe,
Netflix.
Netflix. But what's her name? Who am I trying to think of? Rebel Wilson.
I didn't see a trailer for that.
Yep.
I remember thinking that looked actually really kind of interesting.
Look kind of cute. So that's going to be on Netflix this week if you guys want to pull that up. But that brings us to our blend game for this week. And we had something really fun and interesting that Gabe came up
with. This is such a great one. Such a great
one. Hashtag when I was 10 blend. And so it doesn't have to be a movie that came out the year that you turned 10. But it just means essentially when you were 10 years old. And I think that we would argue that that's an age that we all were paying close attention to, closer attention to movies, and probably falling in love with different types of movies and starting to recognize the types of movies that we enjoyed seeing. So we wanted to play this game where we singled out what was our favorite movie around that time. So, Kev, I'm going to start with you.
You guys know mine. Right? You guys know it. Yeah, but I mean, like, I've told the story before, but I'll just make it shorter here. I was 8 years old. I was in third grade and my parents went out and saw Terminator 2 because I'd seen the trailers on television. And I was like, I was really up to that point in my life, I was really curious about magic. I was like, I loved magicians. I went and saw David Copperfield live in Richmond. My parents got me a birthday tickets to go see him. I was just blown away by how magic was done. Cause the big question I always had was how was that done? Which kind of bleeds into who I am now as a reporter and in the interviews that I do. But, I remember my parents leaving that night. The babysitter.
I don't remember you ever telling us about the magic thing. I feel like that's cool. New to me.
I like that.
And the Copperfield show we went to was so cool. It was like he had ghosts flying through the theater in Richmond. It was really wild. And I just remember like that being the beginning of my fascination with like how a trick is done. So it wasn't until Terminator 2. So my parents left to see it in theaters. I think it was 91, 92, whatever year it was that came out. I was 8. And I said to them, I was like, I really want to see this movie because the trailers look, I mean, the visuals on TV, just seeing the T-1000 in the trailers was like, I didn't understand. Never seen anything like that before, you know, and I was a kid, but it was still mind blowing. So they hired a babysitter. Her name is Tiffany. She came over, watched my brother and I. And then my parents got home. I was like eagerly awaiting their reaction to the film. You know, I didn't have Twitter or anything like that. I didn't know what people were saying about it outside of I'm 8 years old. And so I remember them telling me it was amazing. And I was at that point in my life, I was getting like, you know, you had S, N's and U's in school. Satisfactory, needs improvement, or unsatisfactory.
I remember that.
Yeah. Really? And so I was, yeah.
You guys didn't have E's? We had E's.
We probably did.
Like, it was excellent, satisfactory, needs improvement, unsatisfactory.
We didn't have E above it.
AA, huh. BCDEF.
Yeah. So stupid. That's so strange.
I don't know why.
But I got picked on a lot in school, but because I always raised my hand and asked questions in class. Like that was like people would make fun of me for talking too much. So like, teachers would call me like talkative or whatever. But so I would get like N's sometimes and then they would like write like too talkative in class or whatever it would be.
That's honestly terrible that like you get called talkative for asking questions.
Well, I mean, talkative could also I was 8. I mean, I could have been raising my hand and then that could have caused a question. Then I talked to someone after it. I don't remember I'm not trying to like say the teachers were mean to me. It was just like that was a comment that I got on my report card all the time.
I know, Kev, I bet you he asked a lot of questions.
Yeah, I did. And I was always worried about something. I didn't know I had OCD at that point until I was 14. So I didn't know what was going on with me. I was like, why do I feel so
it was
weird.
One of the questions, why do you cry?
Yeah, why do you cry? I know now why you cry.
I know now why you cry.
Yeah. anyway, so I said to my mom and dad, like, if I get, and now I'm realizing this story's a lot longer than I said it was going to be. sorry. If I get all S's on my next report card, or can I watch Terminator 2 when it comes out on VHS? And they were like, yes. Like, if you can actually get all S's on your third grade report card, we'll do it. And I'll never forget. I got the report card and I remember the report. I always loved the smell of the paper of the report card because it was like a yellow or a white sheet on top of a pink sheet on top of a yellow sheet that you would rip off.
Oh, my God. Yes.
You know, it would go through it. You'd write on the top and it would go through to each layer of the paper.
So let me ask you a dumb question, too. Did you also find out at the end of the year what class you were going to be in the following year? Because on our last day of school, everybody would find out what class they were going to be in next year. And then you'd run around and ask your friends, like, who did you get?
No, we didn't find out till like a week or
or so before.
I don't remember now. Anyway, it's but yeah, it's a good question. But anyway, so I got all S's and then I sat down with my parents when it came out on VHS. We rented it from Farm Fresh or Blockbuster, whichever one was had the movie in because it was so popular. And I sat between my mom and dad and that my whole life changed in that moment. It was the moment that I realized, I don't think I understood it at the moment what was happening, but it was the moment that I realized like, oh, magic tricks, filmmaking. Because I remember looking at my parents and saying, like, when the T-1000 came out of the ground in the hospital, I was like, how are they doing? How did they do that? Because I had no idea how and like how they did that. And it blew my mind.
Have you interviewed Cameron yet?
I interviewed Cameron one time over. It was a radio phoner when I had my radio show. He did a phoner for Avatar, the re-release.
Oh my God.
And I remember I was kind of young in my career. And I wish I would have set the question up a little differently. He was great about it. But I was like, Mr. Cameron, I've always wanted to ask you this. How'd you do the scene in T2 when T-1000 comes up? He goes, well, nothing. Was there when we shot it. It was like it was like matter of fact. Aww. Like it wasn't like mean, but it was like it was a great interview and he was cool and we talked about the T2 smile scene and all this stuff. He was great, but it was like I felt like an 8-year-old going, Mr. Cameron, how did you do that? Like it was like a kid. You know, that's how
I always compare it to all of us too. We're basically a variation of that Chris Farley SNL sketch where he interviews Paul McCartney. He's like, remember that time you were in the Beatles? That was awesome.
But you're right. But anyways, so T2 is my answer because at that point forward, I was 8 and then 10. Terminator 2 was my favorite movie forever until I saw True Romance. But Terminator 2 is still the number one, no question. And 10, that I was riding my bike to Blockbuster every single week renting that film over and over and over and over again just because it changed my life.
Jakey, where'd you go?
I'm going to Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
I was 9 when they re-released the original trilogy in theaters. And when they started promoting it, I like wanted to see it immediately. So my dad took me to the old video store down the road and we rented the original trilogy. Remember the ones that had like A New Hope had Vader's half of Vader's face. Empire had half of a stormtrooper and goals, Return of the Jedi had. These were black. They were black and it had and then Return of the Jedi had half of Yoda's face on it.
Yes.
And then my dad took and then I wanted to read the books. So they my folks actually isn't it crazy whenever you think back to all the stuff your parents did for you and you just kind of took it for granted at the time and then you look back and go, oh my God, my parents did a lot of stuff for me. But I wanted to read the books. So they took me to the mall an hour away in Beaumont, Texas, and I read the books. And then my dad took me to the theatrical releases whenever they released them, like one a month, I believe, which was a life-changing experience. And this was all around the time that we were gearing up for Phantom Menace to come out. I was just that right because Phantom Menace came out when I was still 10, a couple of months away from before. Yeah. And so it just Star Wars just kind of came out at just that right to like it coming back into the zeitgeist was just at that raw, that 8, 9, 10 year old era that was so influential for the 7, 8, 9, 10 year old kids who were that age in 77 when the original one came out. Though I didn't get to live through that experience in 77, I still feel like I got a piece of it 20 years later in 97.
That's interesting.
I still feel like I got to have my Star Wars moment at the right age in which you're supposed to have a Star Wars moment. And and of all of them, Empire was always the one that spoke to me the most because I loved the darkness of it. I loved Vader in it.
Watch Empire after New Hope?
I watched them in the right order. So I remember the whole reason my dad like stopped what he was doing. I remember my dad, because my dad had this shop where he worked on cars. And I remember walking outside to my dad because I'd seen a trailer for Doritos or something in which they showed the No, I Am Your Father clip. And I remember walking outside to my dad who was like working on a truck. And I was like, Dad, is Darth Vader really Luke's father? And I remember he just dropped his wrench and was like, let's go. And then that's when he took me to, and he's like, no, you got to watch him. I was like, I want to watch that one. He's like, you can't watch that one first. You got to watch this one. So, that's where he got me in that.
Was he eating a can of Spam?
No, the Hamiltons don't do spam.
No, remember we talked about spam together?
Because now I guess now they have. He's like, oh yeah, I can put spam on anything.
Right. Yeah. Jake and I were in Hawaii, and I went to lunch with Jan and Keith, and we had like a whole spam bit. I don't remember.
You know what they call it though?
Spamilton. Spamilton.
Spamilton. Yeah, yeah.
Come on. Get out.
That's really good.
All right. So old man gets to go, and I missed.
The year was 1876.
I missed by there were years.
Battleship Potemkin. It was Battleship Potemkin, wasn't it?
I missed by 1 year because if it was 1985, I would have been able to tell you guys a really fun story about my obsession with the Goonies when that movie came out and how I begged my parents to take me to Portland, Oregon.
We'll play When You Were 11 blend later, I guess.
Excellent. May I save all this for then. So instead, I have to go with The Karate Kid, which it came out in 1984.
Cool.
And huge. That I was obsessed and dude,
and you've got a picture with both
Macchio,
of them.
Macchio.
Dude,
and,
how, like, what, okay, what would 10-year-old Sean think of that picture?
He would be confused why they look so old. Say, the hell happened to those guys? and who are you? The beautiful thing about The Karate Kid is that I saw it at a time when, and you know, you guys know now, when we watch movies, you basically can tell what's going to happen in a movie. Like it's hard to be surprised, right? Like, cause we've seen enough movies and there's enough of a formula that for the most part, you can figure out what's going on. But I can remember watching that movie for the first time and genuinely like in the fiber of my being, being afraid for Ralph Macchio, being afraid for him when
the bullying.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bullying and like the scene with when they're all dressed as skeletons and they're chasing after him. Like, I remember how visceral it was when he was putting the hose over the bathroom and thinking like, dude, don't do that, you know, like and just not knowing how it's going to go for him. And the scene where Miyagi shows him everything that he's learned through the menial tasks that he's been doing blew my mind. Like that was
like a release. It was like, oh, yes, that's what that was like. Because when you go from the wax on, wax off to him going like that, it's like, oh, because you kind of like you're it's a good point. You actually almost think to yourself, these tasks seem like ridiculous.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You're him.
And then he's there's one point where like Miyagi does each of them with him. And then he does like a quick, you know, really quick assault of all of them. And he's able to block each of them. And I'm in the moment in that I was just like, you got to be kidding me. That's how you learn karate. Like I was so excited. I was so excited for Daniel. And then, of course, like the All Valley, the way that the All Valley is cut together, you know, with the use of music is tremendous. And you know, he gets his leg hurt. And now, you know, in so many of these sports movies, when like something goes wrong, you're like, all right, well, then now they're just killing time, you know, before we get to the conclusion. But in that moment, I can remember thinking like, oh, my God, he's not going to get back up. Oh, my God, he's not going to win. Oh, my God, how is he going to beat all of the Cobra Kai guys? Like, I was just I was engrossed, totally engrossed. And I remember being in the movie theater in Massapequa Park. We were in the Sunrise Mall. And it was my mom and another friend of mine from elementary school. We're the only three people in the theater. And when he landed the crane kick, my friend and I,
which still to this day looks like it hurts.
Yes, it really does. Yeah.
It really looks like it hurts.
And to Sean's point, I love that film too, and I for all the same reasons. And the bullying thing was like I felt like, oh, I'm not alone. Like even you watch it, you go, oh, the people get bullied all the time. But the what's interesting about that film, though, is you mentioned the idea of him like getting up with and hurting his leg. Every time I would rewatch that film, I would still be on the edge of my seat. Like I was so in it, even though I knew it was going to happen. But you're right, though. There was that curiosity back then when movies were still like fresh and new where you didn't know where they were going. And I think but there's something about Karate Kid and even like Terminator 2 where I would like every time I would rewatch him, I'd go, maybe Arnold won't go into the molten steel this time or whatever. Right, and then maybe he, you know, I don't know. It is that that's just the power of filmmaking.
Tremendous movie. Of course I watched, I think I've told this on the show before. I watched Rocky years later. Cause I mean, I wouldn't have watched Rocky as a kid. And I just remember thinking like, this is such a ripoff of the Karate Kid. And it made me laugh so hard that it's same director who just ripped himself off.
Who is the director? Later.
His name is John Avildsen, John G. Avildsen.
Have you ever interviewed him?
No, never had a chance to interview him. So
that'd be a cool get.
Gabe doesn't play along with the blend game, but has a quick one he wants to throw in here. Gabe, when you were 10, what hipster movie did you enjoy?
Yeah, the hipster movie I was into. I loved Citizen Kane. I was just dissected it over and over again.
The Before trilogy. That was early.
It's understated nature is what I really. No, for me, so it's an interesting journey with this film because
it's 8 and a half, isn't it?
To my knowledge, this was the first movie I ever saw in a theater, and I was like too young to see it. I was like 5 or 6 when I saw this in theaters, but I was obsessed with it. And that's The Mummy starring Brendan Fraser.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Wow. Fantastic. Good
choice. Yes.
And I was obsessed with it because I think by the time
Rick O'Connell, by the way,
between, 6 and 10 and my early
Your
teens,
grandfather.
I was already obsessed with Indiana Jones. And I think the fact that it was this sort of more modern and like special effects driven kind of riff on that subconsciously, I didn't realize that those were connected. I fell in love with that movie. Again, I think if I remember this correctly, this was the first movie I think I ever saw in a theater because I remember distinctly, I was too young to see it. I was sitting on my mother's lap to watch it. I had gotten sick.
Dude, that scene with the beetles are crawling through that, dude. Yeah.
I had gotten sick and she asked if I wanted to go and the previews had already started. And I was like, I'm not leaving. Like I remember this powerful moment where I was like, I had a cold and like I didn't feel well. And she's like, do you want to go? And so I was in a blanket on her lap. At like 6 or whatever, watching The Mummy.
Did you grab a microphone and yell, I'm not leaving, like frantically?
I'm not fucking leaving. That's what I said. another anecdote. I have probably a ton from this because I obsessively, very similar to Kevin with T2, I obsessively watched it for years and years. And I remember when it finally came home, I would watch it on repeat and I accidentally said my first curse word. I think it was my first curse word. But there's a line in it where a guy runs out and he calls him a superstitious bastard. I had no fucking clue what any of that meant, but I was just quoting it because I would play it and I would just say the lines out loud as it was playing, That's as funny. I'm like playing in my room or whatever. And I said superstitious bastard. My older sister goes, you can't say that. Like I remember her. And I remember being
superstitious.
Like, I was like, what? I was like, what did I say? I had no idea what bastard
she
was
you
or
up,
what it meant.
Gabe, she
Pretty
wrapped
much.
You?
Pretty much. Yeah.
That's why he loves The Mummy.
Because
everyone's wrapped. Everyone's wrapped.
There's a couple anecdotes, but growing up, that is why, around that age, that's definitely my pick for my favorite movie because I was obsessed.
It gives him all the wrapping
movie.
He needs. It's great.
All right, ironically, he's not very wrapped because he's like totally decomposed.
Unraveled. That's very true.
Yeah.
All right. Audience picks. We had a lot of fun with people who played along. Seb said E.T. Stephanie went with The Parent Trap, the 1961 version of it.
Oh, wow.
Anastasia went with High School Musical. RJ said Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Great.
Andrea Wolfson went with Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And Dustin Stout said Batman 1989. And Janelle, I don't believe this. She says The Pacifier starring Vin Diesel. I don't know if that's accurate. Anything's possible.
I was young enough when this movie came out. The Pacifier... At the right age.
Pacifier slaps. Pacifier slaps.
I'm with you, Janelle. I'm with you.
They need to do a double feature of the Pacifier and
the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah. And like have Vin and Rock come out and introduce
and
them together.
It's actually in the Fast Universe.
I was obsessed with Vin Diesel in the Fast Universe when that came out. It was great timing.
Yeah.
You can't handle the tooth is the greatest tagline ever written.
Did you ever tell Rock that you love that tagline?
No, but
times that you've interviewed him, you have to bring it up to him.
I just want to meet the person who wrote that. It's what a
they submitted it as a joke, and the further it kept going, they were like, "What?
Wait, do we say something? Do we say it's gone much further than we thought?"
I would love to find out that it was The Rock's idea, and that's why it made it all the way. He was like, "I won't be in this movie if this is the tag."
Next week, reach out on Twitter using hashtag Alex Garland blend and let us know your pick via email at realblend@simpleblend.com.
That's interesting because there are a couple of different directions you can go with that.
Oh, yes.
As a writer, as a director. Yeah, of course. Either way.
Interesting. Okay. Reviews. Drop us one on Apple Podcasts. And also leave us a rating on Spotify. Our next premium episode is going to be the box office game, which we haven't played yet, but we're looking forward to it. And again, check out the description below for more information on signing up. In the meantime, follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean _ O'Connell, at Gabe Kovac, and at Real Blend is the show. We will talk to you guys next week. Hockey pads.
Hockey pads.
Hey, Elvis. Elvis.
I'm going to say Elvis. I know what you're doing there. I know what you're doing there. Oh. That's pretty good. I'll say Elvis too. Elvis.
Yeah, you will.
I'm staying with hockey pads.